A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. My name is David Law. I'm a commentator for BBC Radio 5 Live and BT Sport in the UK. I'm joined by Catherine Whittaker, a presenter for Eurosport. Catherine carried it all on her own shoulders, didn't she, last week? Did the monologue podcast whilst I was sunning myself in somewhere nice and beautiful, which is rather different from the windowless office of which I can touch all four walls in one go at, where I'm sitting right now. Catherine has since been on holiday. We are back together. We are the Tennis Podcast. And Catherine, we have loads to talk about today because the Olympics is on.
Never have the listeners been so pleased to hear the voice of David Law. People have been tuning in with trepidation, fearing another monologue.
You say that, Catherine, but I actually got a number of messages saying, is there any chance you could not be on it permanently? Because it was much better this week. It was concise, it was factual, it was informative, and there's too much faffing around when you're on.
Right, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, minimal faffing, minimal fun as well. But I was pleased to be able to hold the fort while you were sunning yourself, but I'm also very pleased that you're back.
Oh, thanks very much. Should also say a big thank you to Tom, UK designer, one of our listeners, who fixed the audio problem that we had. We've reloaded the show a couple of days ago, so it's there in its full glory if you'd like to listen to it. We had one or two technical problems a week ago, but it is now fixed. Catherine, so Olympic tennis, yes or no?
Oh, yes. Yes to everything Olympic for me. I think the Olympics is the most magical sporting event, one of the most magical events we have in the world. It's just an absolute joy. I'm feasting on it. I'm triple screening. I can't get enough of tennis, of every sport. I'm buying every bit of Rio Olympic based memorabilia. I've made sausage rolls with little cocktail sticks with flags on them. I mean, I go all out for the Olympics. I really do. I think
when were you eating these?
Just sort of constantly on a roll. It started London 2012. We made them for the opening ceremony for London 2012, and they're little flags with the face of GB athletes on. Andy Murray has his own little cocktail stick with a flag on. I think the sausage roll attached to it might have already been eaten, but the flag still exists. So, I mean, I just think the Olympics is marvellous. I cannot believe that everybody that decided not to go, tennis players, golfers, haven't been watching it feeling a little pang of, I wish I was there, because I just don't understand how you couldn't. I understand the argument that if Olympic gold isn't the pinnacle of your sport, then it shouldn't be Olympics. But then it's within the sport's control. It's within the player's control whether it's the pinnacle of your sport, isn't it? I mean, look at how tennis has been building as an Olympic sport. I feel like it was getting there, getting towards being perhaps not the single pinnacle, but an equal pinnacle with Grand Slams. And I feel like some players' decisions have set that back. So it's a self-fulfilling thing for me. And I think absolutely yes, yes, yes for the Olympics and tennis and golf as well. I just think it needs everybody to come together and support it.
Interesting. Catherine, the tennis at the Olympics, for me, I do love it. I have to say there's been quite a few people making the case that perhaps the format of the tennis should be different to what it is and should maybe be team-oriented and in a slightly different way than what feels just like a sort of normal Grand Slam in terms of singles, doubles, mixed doubles, golds for each. I'm kind of with that in terms of maybe differentiating a little bit, but then we started the tournament and all the memories came back from Olympics from years gone by and just how unusual it is, even though it's a bit like in football when you start the FA Cup and the League Cup as opposed to the league matches, you get these upsets, and the same tends to happen at the Olympics. Now 2012 didn't happen. All the big names got to the latter stages. You had Sharapova against Serena, you had Roger Federer against Andy Murray, with Novak Djokovic in the semis against Del Potro. So that kind of was a much more standard set of results. But if you go back over the years, I remember watching in 1992 when Jim Courier was the absolutely dominant player in tennis, and he got thrashed, I think it was by the eventual champion Mark Rosse. Mark Rosse won the Olympic gold. Nicolas Mahut won the Olympic gold in 2004. What did I say?
Mahut.
Nicolas Mahut. Oh, well, maybe Nicolas Mahut will win it this year. Is he even in it? I don't know.
I don't
anyway,
think he's in singles, no.
That's how shocking it was, Catherine. I didn't even get the guy's name right, Nicolas Mahut. And the man from Chile won singles and doubles gold. And what happened earlier this week? It was Sunday night, wasn't it? And it's the night I got back from my holiday. I was supposed to go to bed at 11 o'clock. I thought, I'll just stick it on for a bit. I'll just put it on for a little while. I was still there 5 hours later, watching in the early hours of the morning, because we lost the Williams sisters, we lost the Murray brothers, we lost Masu, and Hebert. I wonder what Nicolas Masu's doing these days. Anyway, he's still dining out on 2004, probably. But then we lost Novak Djokovic, and on one count, that was an enormous shock. And then when you actually looked at the way that Juan Martín Del Potro was playing against him, this was rolling back the years.
When you actually listened back to my podcast last week when I said that he's there for the beating. But, just get that in there.
Well, you were a bit lucky on that one, I thought. But the fact that Del Potro produced that level of tennis was mind-boggling. I mean, he was knocking Djokovic off his feet. There was nothing Djokovic could do. There was a moment when I suddenly thought, there is nothing human that could stop this force right now. The way that Del Potro is hitting this ball, there is nobody else who hits it like that.
Yeah, he's so developed a way of minimising the impact of his depleted power on the backhand side, hasn't he? I mean, I think it's improving. I think it will never get back to where it was, the backhand. But he's developing ways to compensate, even more so than before. Of course, his forehand was an enormous weapon before, but now it's having to do the work that the backhand can't, and it's stepping up. It's up to the challenge, or certainly, what remains to be seen with Del Potro is whether he can, do it all back-to-back-to-back throughout a tournament. That's what he was unable to do at Wimbledon, lost in, was it four or five sets to Luca Pui in the following match after beating Wawrinka in the second round. So that's what remains to be seen with him. But we know now, we know for sure that he can perform at the top level on any given day. And that's wonderful. Listen back to our Wimbledon podcast after that upset over Wawrinka. Everybody was really emotional about that. I mean, obviously Del Potro was emotional. I remember him in Madrid coming in after he'd just got one single win, being really emotional. He had tears in his eyes in the press conference. This is all, I think, territory that Del Potro didn't necessarily expect, or definitely didn't expect. I think he dreamed of it, but I don't think he ever expected or possibly even really dreamed about the moment he experienced on Sunday. And didn't that show, he was crying in the mixed zone. Djokovic was sobbing as he left the court. It was, you couldn't have written a script for higher drama. And the fact that you had simultaneously the Murray brothers losing to the Brazilian pairing in front of the most incredible carnival atmosphere happening at exactly the same time. I must point out that I wasn't even able to watch all of this. I was listening via the BBC Radio 5 Live app, thank goodness for the BBC Radio 5 Live app, on quite dodgy 3G through a USB carport in the States, driving from San Diego to Los Angeles. Not probably my best driving
so cross-court backhands were seeing you swerve to your right.
My goodness me, was it tense. I mean, you didn't want to be on an 8-lane highway while that was happening, trust me, and yet that's exactly where I found myself. And I'm glad I wasn't the BBC Radio 5 Live producer at that moment, having to make decisions about where to go and at what moment, because just the tennis, it was difficult enough to make decisions about where to go and how long to stay there. But they had about 15 other dramatic sports going on at exactly the same time, and obviously, as always, they did a fantastic job. Oh my goodness, it was quite something to experience just via updates on the radio. I've subsequently rewatched the Djokovic Del Potro match via a stream, but yeah, just to experience it that way was dramatic enough, let alone you having the ordeal of watching it.
It was a treat, I have to say, to watch every ball of that, but both in terms of the tennis and then the emotion at the end. I mean, it was pretty heartbreaking to watch the way Djokovic reacted leaving the court, and you got the sense that, well, he's thinking, I may never win this now. I mean, he's at his absolute peak right now. He couldn't win it. It's a bit like when Federer failed to do so in 04 and 08, and it was kind of like, singles-wise at least, chance gone. That's probably why the doubles meant so much to Federer back then. Djokovic now, where is he? I mean, where is he? Where is Serena Williams? She's gone out in the early stages as well. I watched that match last night. She did not look fully fit. The word is that she's got some kind of shoulder problem. She looked under the weather as well. I'm hearing from Craig Gabriel, colleague, who's over there, saying that her voice was husky in the press conference and she didn't seem very well. Djokovic looked pale, looked drained, and he's now withdrawn from Cincinnati with a wrist problem, he's cited, which, I remember thinking immediately after Djokovic lost that match, I'm thinking immediately, all right, well, Djokovic will go out and complete the Masters slam that he's been after by winning Cincinnati finally, and he's not playing. I mean, these are worrying moments for those two.
They are. I mean, to deal with Serena first, I mean, she won the French Open last year being really under the weather. I mean, I remember thinking it at the time. She didn't talk about it. She wouldn't be drawn on it. But I was in several of her press conferences, and it was clear from just the sound of her voice that she was quite ill throughout that tournament. And subsequently, we've seen in the documentary which followed her throughout that tournament, she was very, very ill, and she still won the French Open. So just being under the weather isn't necessarily enough to stop Serena. This shoulder problem, though, is definitely a worry. It would be a desperate shame if injury would be what came between her and history in New York, I think. So I just hope she's fit for New York. Whatever happens, I just hope she's fit and can give it everything. But it's an enormous question mark at the moment. In terms of Djokovic, I thought he looked pale and drained in Toronto last week or the week before last. Honestly, I really do think he... lucky isn't fair. He wasn't lucky to win it. He was the beneficiary of some choking, really, by a couple of his opponents. As I said in my monologue last week, they played the reputation of Djokovic. They played the Djokovic they used to finding at the other end of the court. They didn't actually play the guy that was in front of them, which was a guy that was hitting really quite slow second serves, a guy that wasn't hitting with the same penetration and depth from the baseline, I thought, certainly not with the same consistency. You know, had Djokovic last week come up against just somebody that believed, you know, whether that would have been Andy Murray, who's to say Andy Murray would believe? You know, he's taken some very hard beatings in crucial moments from Djokovic. Maybe he wouldn't have the belief, and maybe, you know, it was enough to carry him through in Toronto. It wasn't in Rio. Sometimes that will be enough to carry him through. That, you know, his slightly less than best is still very, very good. Plus that locker room aura, a lot of the time that will carry him through. Didn't in Rio. And it's going to be very interesting. As you say, it won't have been an easy decision for him to withdraw from Cincinnati, because, as you say, that completing, winning all the nine Masters series, that is something that nobody's ever done in tennis, and that will be a big, big goal for him. And yes, he's got a few years left, for sure, but he is 29 now. He's not quite at the stage where he can just say, oh, of course it will happen at some stage. It probably will. It probably will. I would definitely, if I had to back one way or the other, I'd say he will win Cincinnati at some stage in his career, probably next year. But he can't just assume it will happen. And I do believe that will be a goal for him. So I don't think he'll have taken the decision lightly. His statement, I think, is quite interesting. We're all assuming it's that wrist injury. He doesn't actually specify that it's the wrist injury. He says he's taking some time out to generally recover. He mentions a recurring injury. He doesn't say anything more specific than that.
Well, Cincinnati have said it's the left wrist injury,
but Djokovic himself hasn't. Which is, I mean,
if we can only presume
that it is. But I find it interesting that he hasn't specifically said that.
Yeah, but the tournament have said it is officially, and so he would have had to cite that to the authorities.
He would have done, yeah. But why not mention it in his statement? Anyway, I just think, well, I suppose it is very similar to Serena. It's just an enormous question mark. And again, I would like to see him go into the US. I just don't want injury to be what prevents him having, you know, I want Andy Murray, the new Wimbledon champion Andy Murray, to be tested against a fully fit Novak Djokovic now. I want to see, you know, we won't see Roger Federer, which is already a slight dint in the tournament. But I want Djokovic to be fully fit, and I want everybody to be able to test themselves against the Djokovic that we've come to know over the last year or so, because that's the benchmark for tennis, isn't it, at the moment? So it would be a shame. But he's got plenty of time still to get fit. We just don't have enough information about that injury to know whether it is enough time. But he does have, what, 3 weeks now still? So fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed indeed. Now, I did ask what you all thought. Will he win the US Open now, given all that's happened recently? 26% say that Djokovic will win the US Open. 74% think he won't. 573 votes have already come in for that. We will have pole vault, everybody. Catherine Whittaker cannot get away from this. Pole axed. Forget that. Pole vault will return, and I tell you what, we've got about 20 of them, so we'll have those at the end of the show, which means, Catherine, you can just sort of knock off beforehand if you want.
Yep, done. Yep, offer accepted.
Okay, fine. And that'll be 10 minutes at the end. So we've got about another 2 minutes left to talk about everything else before we get on to pole vault, Catherine. All right?
Yep.
Okay. Before we do that, just that match in itself and the atmosphere that is created at the Olympics, the tennis there, what I particularly enjoy is just sampling what feels like a different atmosphere, something that I personally don't think that I've ever had before as a tennis viewer, of players hitting winners and getting booed. And that has happened this week. Dustin Brown, one of the most dramatic and exciting players that's ever played the game, was getting booed the other day because he was hitting amazing shots.
Against a Brazilian, presumably. Thomas.
Indeed.
It's amazing. I love how partisan the crowd are. For me, that doesn't bother me. I mean, it was extraordinary, the Murray brothers doubles match against Andre Sarr and Thomas Bellucci, wasn't it? The atmosphere of that, I mean, it was definitely coming across down the radio waves. I can only imagine what it was like to watch live. Very difficult for them to come up against just Brazilians inspired by playing in front of their home fans. I've heard a few Brazilian commentators and the like on various bits of Olympic coverage this week talking about how, well, in fact, I heard it put as strongly as Brazilians don't love sport, they love winning. I've actually heard that phrase used a lot. You know, they are even more partisan than than other crowds you might find at similar events, because they're not actually necessarily that interested in just the festival of sport. They want to win desperately. If they're not winning,
that surprises me.
They're not that interested. It surprised me as well. But I think I've heard it talked about in the context of the crowds perhaps not being so good at events where there isn't that much Brazilian interest. I mean, generally crowds have been pretty good, and at some events they've been fantastic. But obviously, inevitably, there's a lot of attention on, well, there's attention on everything at the Olympics, and one of those things is how big the crowds are. And at some of the events, the crowds have looked a little bit sparse, and the explanation I've heard is that they're not that interested if there's no prospect of a Brazilian getting a medal or doing well. They're not overly fussed. But that's probably overstating it a bit, and I'm sure they'll come round, as pretty much everyone in the UK did during the London Olympics. But they're incredibly partisan. I think it adds to it all, really.
Actually, reading incidentally that the delay continues at the tennis, and people are talking about how Nadal, in theory, is supposed to play 3 matches today, and they haven't even started before 4 o'clock local time. I mean, they've got quite the backlog to get through there, and we will see whether Nadal can cope with all of the demands that are going to be placed on him. Now, the draws as they stand, Catherine, given obviously all the rain as well, that adds another element to it. It is interesting, isn't it? And with Serena Williams having lost in the women's draw, there's that section of the draw. I was looking a little bit earlier at the plights of the K quartet, I think I might be able to call them, of Keys, Kasatkina, Kerber and Konta, who are all in the lower half of the draw, right at the bottom there. And so you've got Keys against Kasatkina, and then you've got Konta against Kerber at the bottom there. Somebody is going to win big here, win the gold medal, and we're going to get a surprise semi-finalist at the very least, because you've got Svitolina against Kvitova, you've then got Puig against Sigmund, then Keys, Kasatkina and Konta Kerber. Crikey, say that quickly. So it's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, who's going to come through? Somebody's going to make a name for themselves here.
They really are. Well, Jo Konta has a chance to avenge her loss to Kerber at the Australian Open. I think it's a tough ask, but if anybody doubts how.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
How much he wants it, just go and watch the match she played against Kuznetsova yesterday, because that was quite something. I thought she'd lost it on a couple of occasions. She needed two attempts to serve it out, as she often does. But and when she loses, when she fails to serve it out at the first attempt, you think, oh gosh, it's all going to collapse here. You know, she's not going to cope with that mentally. And then she comes back strong, and she does it at the second time. She creates another opportunity for herself, and she does it at the second time of asking. I was so impressed with her yesterday. I think she'll probably come up just a bit short against Angelique Kerber. And then Keys Kazakina. I really
That's almost like one of my favourite matches in tennis right now on paper. Keys against Kazakina. Those are two players that I absolutely love watching play against anybody. Young, totally different styles, richly talented. One Martin Del Potro type player against an artist in Kazakina. And I think they could have some fantastic matches in the years to come.
Yeah, I think so. I completely agree with all of that. They are both fantastic for tennis. I'm so excited about Kazakina. Obviously, she hasn't had quite the stage that Keys has had yet, but she's really getting there. I think tennis is one of the few sports where the Russian athletes aren't being booed. And I'm pleased to see that, because I don't think it's deserved in tennis. Might be deserved in some other sports, but it's nice. It would be really uncomfortable, I think, if Russian tennis players were being booed. Laura Siegmund, Monica Puig. I mean, I can't believe that one of those two is going to come through. Fantastic opportunity. And then, yeah, Kvitova, Svitolina. She would have probably, well, definitely been expecting to play Serena Williams. So an enormous opportunity there. I think it's a really fantastic mix of the names you'd expect, although obviously not the one big name you'd expect, and some exciting younger, unexpected prospects. I think it's a really nice mix of that. And I think the latter stages are shaping up very nicely indeed, Dave.
Indeed. And meanwhile, with a Djokovic-free draw, one made Martin Del Potro pleased to see from his perspective that he followed that up by beating Joao Sousa in a very close match, but he won through. He's up against Taro Daniel of Japan.
He's having a great week.
Yeah, he had a win over Jack Sock, and then he beat Carl Edmund. So Del Potro has his chances there. Nadal's still there in that section. They could meet in the semi-finals if they were both to get that far. Gael Monfils against Marin Cilic could be a good match. That's in the bottom half of the draw. Nishikori's in there as well, with Fanini against Murray at the bottom of the draw. There's some good stuff coming out here, isn't there?
Yeah, and one of Evgeny Donskoy and Steve Johnson is going to be an Olympic quarterfinalist, if not more. So that's the section of the draw you want to be in, which is the section Andy Murray is in. Nishikori against Alberto Martin. I mean, Andrej Martin, sorry. That's a pretty good draw for him. And then, by contrast, you've got Marin Cilic against Gael Monfils. I've picked Monfils to get a medal at this Olympics, I'm sticking with that, despite this being a very, very tough third round match for him. I am picking Monfils to get a medal.
So you think Monfils will beat Cilic and then beat Nishikori?
Yeah, I do. I really think this. He's ripening, Gael Monfils. That doesn't sound awfully nice, does it? But I mean it. I mean it in a very positive way. I think he's ripening nicely. I think he's had just the right amount of time to have a bit of recovery from Toronto, but still continue his incredible role. I don't know what he's doing with Michael Tielstrom, because he won't tell anyone. But whatever it is, it's working.
Sure is working. Andy Murray against Fabio Fanini. Just a word on Fanini, who had to come from a set down and won a second set tiebreak against Estrella Burgos to eventually come through in the first round. Then he plays Benoit Paire and wins 7-6 in the third. Then about 5 minutes later, Benoit Paire, we're hearing, is being thrown out of the French team for something or other. Don't even know the details of that, but Arnaud Di Pascal, who's the the team captain announced that, you know, he's had enough warnings and he's out.
Behavioural reasons.
Yeah, Deep Pascal, incidentally.
It'd be pretty annoying for Fabio Fognini if he'd lost a Benoit Paire and then Paire had subsequently been thrown out of the Olympics.
Wouldn't have been thrown out then, though, would he? I don't know, maybe.
Well, who knows?
Deep Pascal, incidentally, the team chief of France. Do you remember Deep Pascal playing against Federer in the bronze medal match in 2000 at the Sydney Olympics? Do you remember that?
I do.
And who won?
Oh, no, Deep Pascal.
He did. That was an amazing moment. That was when I was still trying to tell anybody who had listened that Roger Federer is going to be the next big thing. And I was getting lots of eye rolls.
Speaking of which, what happened to Grigor Dimitrov in the first round this week? Yeah, didn't go particularly brilliantly, did it?
Let's move on. So that's that. And also, we were mentioning the mixed doubles is just about to start. Andy Murray couldn't even get in the mixed doubles team alongside Heather Watson. He was hoping to play.
Well, he deferred his place to Jamie, didn't he?
Right.
Well, there's only a 16 draw in the mixed doubles, so one team per country. Andy and Jamie had to decide who would take up that mantle for the men, and Andy said he was always going to defer to Jamie.
I see. So Johanna Konta alongside Jamie Murray, they take on Bethany Mattek-Sands and Jack Sock. I bet that's going to be a formidable team as well. Those two can play some doubles. You've got Muguruza alongside Nadal. Crikey! Imagine trying to beat those two. So there's loads still to look forward to in the tennis if they ever get back out on the court, because it is soggy and it looks as though we're going to have a bit of a delay still to come some more. Now, Catherine, Roger Federer, you touched on a week ago in your solo podcast, and you gave your views on Roger Federer and whether what sort of comeback you think he might eventually produce. I mean, we've never seen anything like this before from Roger Federer, have we? That's the thing that stands out for me above all else, is this just does not happen. And the theory is, the suspicion is that it was something that was worsened when he took that fall against Milos Raonic, and was that sort of really uncomfortable moment when he got up and you just thought, he doesn't quite look right here. I've asked, we'll have a quick preview of pole vault, we'll have more later, folks, but a quick preview of it. 796 people have voted in this ongoing poll, of which asked the question, in 2017, Roger Federer will return and either A, contend for slams, B, break down again, C, start his farewell year, or D, retire immediately. So, you know, that's what we asked. What do you think?
Is there not an E of come back and be pretty good, but not quite be contending for slams?
No, there isn't.
I think it could be that. I think it could be generally come back and be really quite good, you know, reaching quarterfinals and so on, not contending for slams, but could still have one run left in him.
Interesting. Well, the results were 56%. More than half of those 796 people say that he will start his farewell year. 29% think he will contend for slams again. 10% think he'll break down again. And 5% think he'll retire immediately. I know what you mean. I don't necessarily think next year will be his last, because I just think counting Roger Federer out, It just feels like a dangerous game to me. I think maybe he's got two more years. I think you may well be right. You know, I think he may come back, do okay, not reach the heights he wants, and then decide, right, now I'll have a farewell year in 2018.
I think if that was his intention now, I think he would tell us. I don't see why he would put up the pretense of saying, I'm taking this time out to try and get myself as fit as I can be to have another assault at the tour and winning another slam. I don't know why there would be that pretense.
I think he might decide to try to make a proper go of it for next year, get himself fit, but get to the end of the year and think, this isn't going to happen.
Yeah,
and you know.
Yeah, I think that's entirely possible. I just don't think that's in his mind now. I take him at his word, what he's saying now. There's a lot of time between now and the end of the year. He doesn't know how the knee rehab's going to go. Who knows what tennis will look like at the end of the year. But as things stand at the moment, I think he will come back. I don't think he will come back intending it to be a farewell year. And I think my best guess is that he won't quite be, he'll have lost a little bit of ground. He'll still be pretty good, but he might still just have one run left in him, maybe at Wimbledon.
Bit of coaching news, Catherine. Bit of coaching news. Goran Ivanišević is back on the tour. I think you said 2 weeks ago, this guy is not going to be able to stay off the tour for long.
Yeah, I reckon he accepted the first phone call that came his way, but it just beat everyone else to the punch.
The first phone call that came his way was from me. I can guarantee you it didn't happen. So I tried. I put on the full sales pitch. I said, look, all I want to do is beat Catherine. He's like, you've got no chance, pal. Forget it. So anyway, he's gone for Thomas Burdick instead. And I think that's an absolutely fascinating combination. Goran Ivanišević and Thomas Burdick. He's basically back where he was 2.5 years ago, Goran, isn't he? Alongside a player who feels as though he's still got untapped potential, still hasn't won a slam yet. Most people thinking he never will win a slam, and we would include ourselves. I certainly would amongst those of thinking that Burdick is not going to win a slam. But I would have said that about Cilic too. And he took him, he helped him to the US Open title. Will it work?
Yeah, I think it's a really it's risky, but I think it's a pleasing risk to see Thomas Burdick taking. And I think, you know, he's 30 now. He needs to be taking a risk, and I think I said at Wimbledon that's one of the toughest gigs in tennis, the Thomas Burdick coaching job. And I think Goran, if anyone is up to it, it's another massive contrast in personalities, but that wasn't an issue with Marin Cilic. But then he'd known Marin Cilic for a very, very long time. They knew how their personalities gelled together. I don't think Burdick and Goran do. Maybe they do. I don't know. I don't know how much they've got to know one another from Goran being back on tour. So I could be wrong there. But it's certainly going to be very interesting. And I think when I say I think it'll work, I don't necessarily think that'll mean a Grand Slam title for Thomas Burdick. But I think it's probably as good a thing to try as any.
You know, honestly, I think what he will do is exactly what he did with Cilic and try to slightly rejig his service action a little bit using the know-how that Goran has. But most of all, I think he will say to Thomas Burdick, you are 6'5" tall, you are built like a brick house, I've left a word out there, and I want to see you hitting the ball like a big man, because that is what you are. I want to see you dominate people. I want to see you unload into the ball like Del Potro does, and I want you to knock your opponents off the court, mate. All right,
and that's what he's going to send him out to do. And I want you to believe. I think for me, that's the most important thing at this stage now of Burdick's career. He is walking onto the court with too much baggage against these big guys. He should have beaten Novak Djokovic in Toronto. He had so many opportunities, and I don't use the word choke lightly because it is a brutal, horrible word, but I mean, he had three set points in that first set. One was a double fault, and two, he fluffed forehand putaways that he could make in his sleep. I mean, he really, really did. He blew it completely. Djokovic was there for the taking, and he didn't believe. And Goran needs to look at the tape of that and say, you know, if I could go into my fourth Wimbledon final as a wild card, age 30... and 29 he was, wasn't he? 29, 30? And I still believed that I could win that Wimbledon, then you need to believe that you can still win a Grand Slam and that you can still beat these top players. That, for me, is crucial.
I would agree with that. Catherine, can you just stick around for a few minutes for pole vault? Go on.
Silently. I will stick around silently. My presence will be felt through the airwaves, just not
here
audibly.
We go. I'll try to engage you, everybody. So, first of all, in the pole vault, we asked, Burdick to work with Ivan Isevich. Goran helped Cilic to a first slam. Will he do it for Thomas Burdick? You said yes, only 12% of the times. 12% of the people who voted think that Burdick will win a Grand Slam under Goran Ivanisevic.
It's not a nuanced enough question, David. As I said,
if
the question was, is it a good appointment, I think you would have had majority yes. Is it going to win him a Grand Slam? Majority no.
Well, it's too wishy-washy, isn't it, a good appointment? This is very specific. Is it going to actually lead to a Grand Slam title? That's what's important.
Okay, I'm going to go back to being silent.
Pole vault, well, I'm the expert. We'll have pole accident a bit. Anyway, so we've got the Williams sisters, Murray brothers, Djokovic and Eber Mahu going out on the same day. Is that the biggest day of upsets ever? 69% said yes. 31% said no. And a lot of people reminding of that. I think it was the first Wednesday at Wimbledon about 3 years ago when Federer lost to Stakovsky and Nadal went out as well. And I think we lost some of the top female players as well. So, you know, it's a difficult one, but it felt at the time as though it was one of the biggest days of upsets that I've certainly ever seen. In fact, Catherine...
Well, I mean, the stats speak... Three top seeds, so the men's doubles top seed, the men's top seed, the women's top seed, and the second seed in the men's doubles. That, I don't think that's ever happened before. That speaks for itself.
Quite an interesting little chat I had with Ali, who follows us on Twitter and is a regular listener to the Tennis Podcast, always comes up with some insightful views and took me to task on including the Murray brothers in that equation, saying that really they are not that big of a shock.
They
going
were the
out.
Second seeds.
Well,
they
I mean,
won a Davis Cup title together. Jamie Murray is, well, he's not quite doubles world number one at the moment, but he's very close to it and has been there. And Andy Murray's the second. I mean, no, Ali, no. That is a big shock.
Ali, have your say.
It's not as big a shock as Eber Mahu. I'll give you that. That's massive.
Talking of Catherine Whittaker, I mean, you know, Catherine hates pole vault. However, she did inspire one of the best pole vaults of the entire week so far. When she
I'm
was
never
asking,
doing it again.
Yeah, it was great. I loved it. Do it again, Catherine. When she asked, now that Novak Djokovic has lost at the Olympics and can't play it again until Tokyo in 2020, who is the most likely to do the golden career Grand Slam out of Djokovic, who's won all four majors but not the Olympics, and Andy Murray, who's won Olympics and two of the majors, but he hasn't won the Australian Open and he hasn't won the French Open? That's what Catherine asked, or at least she asked it sort of innocently, and I immediately lifted it for part of pole
vault. And all I got was an onslaught of people saying, how dare you compare the career of Andy Murray to Novak Djokovic?
Incidentally, what were the arguments that people were making? I mean, I don't really see the problem.
I said Novak Djokovic will be 33 at the time of the Tokyo Olympics. So what is more likely? Essentially, Andy Murray winning a French Open and an Australian Open at some point before he retires, or Novak Djokovic winning the Tokyo Olympics aged 33?
Well, what do you think, out of interest?
I don't think either are highly likely. I think both would be a just monumental effort, but I think marginally, I think Andy Murray winning an Australian and French Open is slightly more likely. He's reached finals of both. I can't believe that he won't win an Australian Open before he retires. I can't believe that. And I think there's a far greater question mark about where Djokovic and tennis will be in the next 4 years than there is over whether Andy Murray will be in contention for an Australian Open and a French Open in the next couple of years.
And when he has so many chances at each of them, of course.
I mean,
and he's reached the final of both of them now. I would certainly say Murray is the more likely of the two myself. And 71% of those polled also felt the same. 71% said Murray, more likely than Djokovic. So that's that. Now we've got a couple more. La 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 la. Catherine's enjoying it. And the final one we're going to go for is... which out of Novak Djokovic and Serena Williams will go all the way at the US Open? Serena, Novak, both, or neither? What do you think, Catherine?
Oh, that's such a difficult question because we don't know. We don't know what shape they're in. We probably won't know until they play, because I would be surprised now if Serena plays Cincinnati, although she hasn't formally withdrawn. We know Djokovic, but we know we won't see him before New York. So that's just an enormous question mark. For me, I'm shooting in the dark here. For me, Andy Murray is the favourite to win the US Open as things stand at the moment, having seen what I saw in Toronto. And Serena's still the favourite for me. Serena's still the favourite. But big question marks on both sides.
49% say that neither of them will win the US Open. 29% say that Serena will. Only 11% think that Djokovic will on his own, but 11% think that they both will. So it's about 50-50 in terms of how well people think they'll do versus whether they won't win it at all, either of them. So there we are, Catherine. There's pole vault for another week. We'd better go and watch some tennis, because who knows, one day it may stop raining. I heard a lovely line from John Murray, the BBC's football correspondent, who's also out there doing Five Live work at the Olympics. And he said, he was doing the rowing, and he said, I am in Rio, but I really feel as if I'm in Ramsgate.
Oh, I heard it compared to a rainy Saturday at Molyneux, David, earlier on the radio.
Now, believe me, the clouds would be much darker and the mood would be much worse. I should say that I'm a supporter of West Bromwich Albion, who are the biggest rivals of Wolverhampton Wanderers, who play at Molyneux. So no offence, Wolves fans, you know, I know you're going through a bit of a rough time. Too bad is all I can say. Catherine, lovely to talk to you. Nice to have you back from Toronto and San Diego and all these places that you've been to.
Nice to be back. Nice to have someone else to podcast with.
Isn't it? We thank you for listening. As always, do follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and very importantly, do leave us reviews on the iTunes charts so that we can tell everybody how much you like it. If you don't like it, don't listen again, go away, and don't leave us a review. But frankly, you'd have already switched off, wouldn't you, if that was the case. We thank you for listening. We'll speak to you soon.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.